Good afternoon, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. Joining us in the next hour is going to be the author of a book called Sources of Contemporary Genocide, John Bart Giraud. And he's been a chap that has been in the wings that I've known for a long time, just we haven't communicated in a long time. But I had this feeling, this urge that, you know, I'd like to talk about genocide. And lo and behold, you know, he sent me an email to show me his book, and I'm going like, that's just the perfect topic for us to keep in the long, long line of things to talk about. You hear that sound? You hear that sound, son? That's freedom. I love to wake up to the sound of freedom in the morning. It sounds like victory. And there's no greater victory than Calvary, and no greater Calvary than the Power Hour Calvary. We're forming posse, and we're going to go into many, many, many places around this giant Eden Earth and talk to you about the despicable concept and ideologies of genocide and how it is right here in our midst, everywhere, and everything we buy and everywhere we shop, because this hasn't stopped, this neocolonial type of conquering the world and prostrating the people of it is very pronounced, and it's just much more subtle now. Now, a lot of times, it's, you know, the good guys are coming in to look after you, and when they asset strip your resources and leave you prostrate and destitute, you won't even know what hit you, and you won't have to worry about most of mainstream media reporting it in any way, shape, or form. We're still in the midst of our COVID crisis. They won't let that one go. I almost laugh like hell over it, because politicians here in Ontario, Canada, where I am, our premier goes to a wedding, doesn't wear a mask, he doesn't social distance. Well, if there was a real hazard, you wouldn't be letting anybody go near the hazard, and you'd be protecting them from it. So the masks don't work, says so on the box. Social distancing is a scam, and their actions prove it. The mayor here in Brampton, where I'm speaking from now, he did the same thing. He's organizing hockey games using city rinks to have his buddies come in and play hockey. Well, the kids are locked out, and no one else can use these facilities. No masks, no social distancing, especially when you're getting an elbow or a body check. So that tells me their actions and reactions are contrived, because they're not doing, not practicing what they're preaching in any way, shape, or form. So that's something to bear in mind, because I look at this in a way, if it goes full tilt, and I've heard Comrade Gates say it himself, that his vaccines are the final solution. And I remember that word in history, those few words. I remember them in history. And that makes me very, very concerned that we could be on the crux of another devastating population reduction that won't be called genocide, because you'll just have died of a terrible disease that no one can really isolate or prove exists, except in the mind, almost like the Twilight Zone. Welcome, John. John Bart Giraud, of this famous book, Sources of Contemporary Genocide. And even though it's a complex topic, it's easy reading. You know, I went through a good half of it the last couple of days and was just amazed at how accurate, like things I thought that nobody knew about, he's got in his book. And, you know, those are just like word-of-mouth things I've heard from Canadian veterans about people who hang significantly to the right in World War II coming in under the guise of something to become soldiers in the Canadian Army. I heard that from, you know, a former Canadian military officer who told me 24 hours... and you're a Canadian citizen, and your Wehrmacht history is appreciated, and you become instant NCOs in the Canadian Army way back when. So I was really surprised to find that in his book from Ukrainian SS regiments. So welcome, John. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the genocide.
Oh, thank you. Nice welcome there. How I got into it? Well, in fact, when I was a kid, I went off, I was in college, and I didn't like it. I didn't like, you know, having my mind forced into the patterns that I didn't necessarily think were okay. So I quit, and I went off to do missionary work. Or not missionary work, I wasn't really equipped to, but I went off to teach school in French West Africa. And what I didn't realize was that it was African independence at the time, and that there was this huge, sort of wonderful, but very strong change in perspective of the freeing from colonialism of the former European colonies. And so there I was, and then the independence was coming through, and in places like the Congo, where they knocked out where the old colonial powers knocked out Lumumba, there had been the losses or vengeance or the chaos which resulted in the deaths of a lot of medical personnel and teachers, Europeans, usually fairly simple working class European people who were down there. The teaching school or starting in for doing infirmaries, or the honchos, the bosses, all went back to Europe, and the people were all left in the field. And that happened in a number of African countries. Fortunately, where I was, everything was quite beautiful. And that's where Albert Schweitzer had set up his hospital, and he'd been in service to the people there. And his hospital was basically a leprosarium. He was taking care of very, very hard, gritty, a very gritty reality, which he dealt with and other people just hadn't dealt with. So for all the modern diatribes against the missionaries and all the harm they did serving the capitalist system of the West, the colonial system, there were actually doctors and nurses who were in service. And I thought to be part of that for a while, and was for a while, and then got very, very ill and limped back to Europe, luckily with my life. But while I was there, I realized that how vulnerable I was and how vulnerable the people around me, the people of faith, who were actually fairly simple people without other motivations, most of them quite religious, but real believers in their service to the people that they were trying to care for. How vulnerable we were, and what kept us really just from being blotted out in massacres. And so to be at the other side, to be an intense minority in a revolutionary time, and at the absolute mercy of humanity, of the humanness in the people around one, really made me think. And so ever since then, I've been interested in the subject of genocide. And then many years later, living in Maine, where I had been teaching at Harvard for a while and got too vocal and then couldn't get teaching work anywhere. So I had a family. And so we went up to Maine and found an old shell, builder shell, and turned it into a home. But at the same time, I was sort of pub writing and publishing. And our small press, first of all, I it was just before the Gulf War, or 1989, and I had a sense of a need for the Convention on Genocide, the UN Convention, and I couldn't find it anywhere. There wasn't one in the library. There wasn't one in the state. I couldn't find one in the state. So I finally was available through a West Virginia law compendium for $147, a textbook. And that was no good. And so if I went to the UN and said, look, can you give me a copy? They said, it's out of print. So my wife and I, out of our food budget, we didn't have any money, published the Convention on Genocide until the UN got it back into print. And we sent copies to all the representatives and senators out of pocket, because we figured they should know that. Meanwhile, they waged the Gulf War, which was arguably a terrible. There was a lot of falsehood which led into it, and it cost the lives of another people, many of whom most of whom were, as people, simply not so different from us, and in my way of thinking, innocent people. From then on, I think I realized that there should be the subject of genocide wasn't limited to the Holocaust of World War II, which we were raised on and seen in the movies so much, and which we certainly have objected to and found as an epitome of horror, but that it existed beyond that the basic evil of wiping out populations of people because either we wanted something of that population or their assets or their resources, anyway, I think my point's probably already made, and the listener would understand where I'm headed with this. From then on, knowing about the convention, knowing what it said, seeing the faults of our own thinking as North Americans, because I think Canada on the first initial Gulf War operations was in on it, and we all plowed ahead into what is historically, which we have to look back at, is really the number of deaths and that steady obliteration of the civilian infrastructure, which would then have tremendous after effect in the deaths of civilians. So I had to question myself about that. I was an Air Force medic at one point and a reservist. Fortunately, never called up. Not a very military person at all, but had to deal with a draft. So I had some sense of involvement in the national life, certainly that I was part of. I was living in America at the time, an American. Once you get into understanding the effect on other people's lives of the policies that we take for granted of things like imperialism, which is certainly signaled to us by our history. But once we begin to understand the suffering that it causes, and I know I don't think I've ever met anybody who would openly countenance or suffering. So the people around me, certainly in Maine, nobody would want the suffering caused, and yet we were able to commit to a war effort in an area of the world. So once one starts asking the questions, then it's hard to, you can't really drop it. And that's how I got involved in the writing about the genocide. And I found that one way to possibly counter it would be to keep a record of instances where you can see the possibility of genocide happening. And then if you keep a record of that as events occur, then it's there in print, and you can't put your mind on it and saying and pontificate about how this is what genocide is, and this is you just watch the events unfold, and you watch a whole people being destroyed or wiped out, and then the events of history speak for themselves before they go through the mill of the PhD degrees, which will adapt them to the necessities of the policies which allow academic advancement. So I've spoken enough for a while. Let's go back to where the narrative belongs here with you.
Well, by and large, it belongs with you. You're telling us living history that, you know, maybe some of our audience is too young to even understand. You know, you were a marshal marching with Dr. King, back in the glory days, and, longly devoted to human service and having a decent set of what's right and what's wrong, and showing that there is a line in the sand that I will not cross to go to the wrong side, and I will stand up in spite of great obstacles. being put in my life to stand up for what I believe in. And I've done the same thing to the point of, you know, a pistol being pointed into my head and somebody threatening to kill me because I'm not going to acquiesce to the criminal elements that were, you know, steeply involved in Canadian policing.
Well,
no, there is a right and there is a wrong, and I'm not crossing that line. And if you think blowing me away is going to do you any good, you know, your butt's going to be in prison for 25 years, and you're going to be a cop. You're not going to be too well appreciated in there by anyone. And if you think that that hell is worth it for you, you go ahead and pull the trigger. I get out easy.
Right on.
They backed down at that point because, you know, I guess they were thinking about the quartermost portions of their body. And it's just phenomenal at how easy people in power can be lured to a deep, dark side to oppress people who are not intellectually sophisticated, perhaps, not financially well off, and probably almost close to illiterate, because they don't understand what's really going on in the world to any great extent. They just live, look after their families, tend to their crops, try to have some sort of happy, decent life, and great powers come into their world, turn it upside down, beyond turning it upside down, just turning it into a complete and total equivalent of a war zone, even though there is no war declared. And people are systematically arrested, beaten. There's rapes, there's murders, and basically you could all sum it up with George Bush's favorite word, terrorism. But it's terrorism by nation states working as agents for large corporations. I just find that abominable. Like, if there's anything I want to see corrected on planet Earth, that's got to be at the top of the list, if not the list, is to stop this sort of thing. And people need to be nourished, developed, and cared for in a proper and decent way. And I don't want to earn money that comes from exploiting people or killing people. And we have many active genocides right now as we speak. My own country sells weapons to the Saudis to commit genocide in Yemen. And fearless leader always stands up and, you know, how he loves life and safety, and he's going to do everything he can to save lives and all this other horse feathers. And on the other side, you know, he's peddling weapons faster than you can shake a stick at. I remember being in a debate in a Calgary radio station against, you know, with some oil executive from Alberta, because we were in the Sudan. And the Quebec Teachers Pension Fund was making money from these investments. And what they did is go in with helicopter gunships and blow away the locals so they would have abandoned certain properties so that they could be used, developed, and exploited by this oil company. And I said, I just don't like that as a means of doing business. And how can you, as the Quebec Teachers Pension Plan, be so upset about, you know, somebody does something in a school shooting, which may or not, more than likely they're contrived psychological operations, in my opinion, but they're helicopter gunships coming in and blowing kids away. And that's okay for you. That's a means to do business so you can have a comfortable retirement. I would rather be destitute than to know that, you know, what I'm putting on my plate comes from slaughtered children. And we've had a call in years and years ago, I'll never forget, about an American veteran in a helicopter gunship describing, you know, what the 50 caliber bullet did to a child that he shot and how he threw the weapon out. And that's it, just gave it up. Arrest me, throw me in jail, put me in prison, kill me, but I'll never squeeze that trigger again. And I admired that man very, very much because he saw the evils of his way and he corrected himself to realize that I've been lured into this trap. And many of people out there are, maybe even people listening, and it's time to say, enough. We're not going to participate.
Yeah, I can't think of any people that would actually forthrightly try to stand up for genocide anymore. I mean, there's anything in the world that almost everybody agrees on, it's that that the mass murder is a bad thing. So how we hide the demands of our armament industry from ourselves is quite incredible, and much of it is the media's choice and fault. Even that you mentioned the sale of arms to the Saudis. As far as I know, that's the people objected to that, and they didn't like it, and so it was done in very hidden and nefarious ways. They cut. I think Bombardier was tried. Well, I don't possibly wrong. Some Canadian companies were trying to sell low-grade armaments to the Saudis, and I think they were really attacked because of it. So then the arms sales began to proceed through kind of backdoor means. I know that there's a one of the defense deals with Ukraine involved a way to send the weapons to the Ukraine, which then were resold and sent to the Saudis. So they'd find more roundabout ways of supplying the weapons that do the damage.
Oh, indeed. I'll have to send you links to a lady I had on the show some time ago, probably 2018, Delyana Gaitenshava. And, you know, her big story was following, like, jumbo jet-sized plane loads of arms coming from the various Russian former Bloc Stan countries, going through Bulgaria, where she was from, and being diverted to Saudi Arabia and then going to Syria to arm all the insurgents to create havoc there, all under diplomatic cover.
Yeah.
American
right.
diplomatic cover. And,
right.
you know, to stand there and say that you support some sort of moral high road in public, and then on the other side, it's not just, okay, here's a truckload or two, jumbo jet plane loads of stuff, you know, going out. And I looked at that. It was probably one of the, you know, the greatest stories in a decade, if not
yeah,
more.
Yeah, that's a super story.
That she did. And you know what happened to her? She was fired from her job.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to tell anybody that.
Yeah.
So I admire her for her courage.
Absolutely, but it's also the people's courage, in a sense, because who approves of these things? I mean, it's a very small percentage of people who actually think it's good to be arming people to wipe out a population like of starving and often sick people, like the people of Yemen. Who? I don't know any Americans or Canadians who approve of it. I haven't met one. I can't find one to talk to who actually think it's a good thing.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
You know what my mission was when I started this, when I was so excited? I still am excited after 21 years. I said, anybody who's got mouth must use Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash if they want to stay healthy. I'm going to make sure that it is available to anywhere I can put the product.
You got a lot of zinc in these products.
Zinc inhibits plaque growth. Zinc is also known to have an antibacterial properties. Also, zinc works to eliminate bad breath by destroying volatile sulfur compounds. Such an incredible product. And
wow.
I'm so proud to say my wife did that and saved my life, saved my mouth. And she is the mother of all the people who are using a Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash in the world.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at theparamol.com. That's theparamol.com.
If you eat your Manna food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at theparamol.com. That's theparamol.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund, joining us, the author of a great book on genocide, John Bart Gerard, and it is Sources of Contemporary Genocide. It's something that we live with every day in many regions of the world. We had a great discussion off air continuing on about a lot of these things. I believe we are in the midst of a great conflict, and that's what the COVID monster is all about, that ultimately the force that controls the world, the dynamics of it, has put an interest, and I've said this since I've been back at Power Hour, to destroy us. I played Sophia the Robot's thing that they're going to kill us all with no compunction, and her brother robot Han saying that our only defense is to turn off the power, and laughs saying we won't do it, that this entity of life is the asset stripper. They're the ultimate predators all through history that have been concealed and hidden from us. And I found that in old Hebrew words that were never translated into modern-day Bibles, that there's two lives, two Adams, us, the original Adam, and the Adam HaChadash, the image Adam, that is to slay us. And they translated to slay members, but in that context, the word Adam doesn't mean penis, it means mankind, that mankind is going to slay this one. All of us. And part of the process is we have to be dehumanized. We're going through. Did anybody just feel like they woke up in a political re-education camp in North Korea after COVID started? You know, and it reminds me of Patrick McGoohan's show, The Prisoner. You're in this little island, and you know, you got the circles all over the place and screens, and you're wearing masks, and everything's different. There's a whole new set of rules everywhere. You know, am I the only one? No, I'm not the only one. But, you know, I just realized that, hey, they're doing something to me, man. This is like a mass political re-education camp all around the world, and it's all in all the media. And like I said at the beginning, I don't see our leaders doing it, so there can't be a crisis. There was a real crisis. I've been in places where there's a real crisis. If there's a real fire, you're not going in there without equipment to protect yourself, and you're not going to have a wedding in there, and you're not going to play hockey in there, and you're not going to be there without your protective equipment. I've been at a train wreck with poison gas leaking out. Well, you're going to have your stuff if you can have it, or you're taking severe chances if you don't, right? And there's no games being played there. You know, things are closed off. You can't get by because you're saving lives because there's a real, real threat. And when you go in and you're not doing anything except what you used to do before, that tells me the threat has been created. It's not a real threat. Because who would want to bring a carrier of a deadly
deadly disease to someone's wedding to kill them. You know, and
so George, I'm not against what you're saying, but I say, what is the purpose then? What is the purpose of COVID? What would be the purpose of a covert COVID?
It's a conditioning process. See, I'm Polish-German.
Okay.
And we've been there before. You talked about the big Holocaust. My family
okay.
went there. This has been explained to me since I was a child. It didn't
okay.
start in 1933. First, you had to have conditioning. And part of the conditioning was you're going to be relocated. We're sending you
right.
to new places in the East. And we had contact
right.
tracing then. You put a yellow star on your jacket.
Right.
See, we can contract chase you now. So now they come up with all kinds of new things. You know who put those tattoos on your arm? IBM, International Business Machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know
yeah,
what that was
that.
For? That was whether to decide whether you're a useless eater when the Hollerith machine punched out the cards with all your pluses and minuses put on there. But we didn't have computers. It was a mechanical sorting machine. And then we went later when we had electric computers to have those same cards. But now this card isn't going to be a card. It's going to be the chip. It'll be the same thing from other companies as well as IBM.
Yeah, there's a very good book by a man named Black on that subject, the IBM and its role in the Holocaust.
So I see the pattern here. See, pattern recognition is part of survival. And I say, well, you're doing all the same things, but you do it like you rule by fear or by force. They're ruling by fear, by creating fear with us the way they've done. This is the art of war. This is Sun Tzu. This is 1984.
Yeah.
This is Brave
okay.
New World. All the great literature and, you know, tactical strategy books that have ever been written are all upon us right now to get me to be afraid. So it's divide and conquer. Now I'm afraid. This guy beside me, in a common threat, when the tanks are rolling, we would work together, fight together, and save our lands and our lives. But now, he's a silent spreader.
Okay,
and I can't
gotcha.
Go near him.
Yeah.
So this is the greatest strategy tactic. You know, I'm an ex-cop, so when there's a good, you know, I heard of like a jewelry robbery in Europe, somebody gets into one of the biggest vaults, takes everything out. I don't know how they did it. Nobody knows how they did it. They got in there on the weekend, they come back in the morning. It's like Mission Impossible. You've got to
right.
admire them. That was a great plan. You pulled it off. So I have to sit back and go, you know, that's one of the best ones I've ever heard of. When it comes to strategy, tactics, and warfare, which we never really take to the bank in our normal daily lives, but we have to be specialists here with a lot of people I associate with on the power, I'm going, you know what? That is the most classic application of Sun Tzu's The Art of War I've ever heard of or seen. And who's doing it and why? And it can't be for my benefit. Another thing I developed that, you know, we never had a time ever to talk about, but we'll have you back many times, I think, because this topic is so big and complex. I call it Jesus logic. And anything that sets you free is the truth. And anything that enslaves you has to be a lie. And by all these activities, we're not being freed, we're being enslaved. There's more and more conditions being put on my life step after step. This mask being enforced so much, even though the box says it's worthless, is a conditioning phase to the next step. That's the COVA pass that Canada and many other NATO countries bought in May, and that will be inserted into our bodies. And the COVA pass can be scanned by the man on the train who used to say, pay us, please. He can do it from a safe distance. And this time, instead of going to the East to be relocated, I go into quarantine because I have COVID. Someone says I have COVID, and I disappear. And then I get a letter, or my family gets a letter and says, well, you passed away, and you can't have the body back because it's infected with a dangerous disease. We cremated it, and, you know, so too bad.
Right.
And it's the same thing all over again. But because of the fear process we developed, you don't want the body back. You don't want to know where Uncle Fred went because he was a carrier of the dreaded disease and such like that. So in that regard, it is, you know, the most phenomenal propaganda operation. And that's what scares me to death, is they're genociding us again. And we're willingly getting in line. And the other big thing they do is they say in many of the countries, well, you know, we have to get those nasty guns too, eh? That's the Armenian genocide. All the Armenian soldiers had to surrender their rifles. And even though they were all sworn members of the military, and turn them up, and then all of a sudden, the Black Hand comes up and everybody's marched off into the desert to die. A million people die. And it never happened. You ask the Turkish government, it never happened. There was no genocide. But there's films.
And
old films have been smuggled out.
Yeah.
And one that really haunts me was the sword dance, or saber dance, where a woman is impaled with a saber, left to squirm on the ground while everybody looks around her in a circle and laughs and enjoys it as entertainment until she passes away. And I'm going, that is the lowest common denominator of humanity, but they exist. And if we give them total power and control and fall for their stories, we're going to have to dance to the music again.
Well, that kind of dehumanization is trained into people. I mean, it doesn't just suddenly appear. These are the results of cultural programming through generations sometimes. There's plenty of it still around. There's the Palestinians are treated rather badly, but it's not something that suddenly occurred. What we're reacting to in North America with Black Lives Matter is the result of, you know, kind of constant programming of attitudes of privileged groups against the people who worked for them and did much of the building. So, the dehumanization is surely there, George, but it's not like they're suddenly it's just a different kind of person. It's a kind of person who's been trained and trained and trained and trained not to feel humanity toward brothers and sisters.
Well, it's happened very fast. I walk towards someone without a mask, and they scatter like I'm pointing a machine gun at them. If you ever
see
it in a public place, people are ready to hit the floor like you just tossed a grenade.
Your thinking's good.
It is different. Relationships I've had at employment for 14 years, people just look at you, you know, if you believe in the myth, a lot of other us, we don't. So, you know, remember one retired doctor from Europe, came into my sphere or something, and he just liked what I said, gave me a big hug, and his new girlfriend, you know, almost choked and went to the floor because she started to believe this stuff. And, they're not 6 feet apart. They're actually, you know, hugging each other. And, because there's nothing there. I've been on the front lines of this forever, seeing people from China, Iran, northern Italy, carrying their bags with them as they're coming in the door, and nothing happens. What happens is the power of the pen. If I want to write on the death certificate that you died like a Monty Python film from live pelicans being shoved down your throat until the beaks came out of your elbow, that's your cause of death. And if I do it 10,000 times, that's a pandemic. And we have to really get after those pelicans.
Yeah.
It's power of the mind. Marshall McLuhan said, World War III will be a guerrilla information war with no distinction between civilian and military forces. I'm a civilian.
Good quote, yeah.
But I'm a general in this army and in this war. And I have to understand the tactics, the strategies, and the rationale and convince people of it, or we will be swallowed up in this war. And that's what I don't want to see, because the end result is the genocide. The Palestinians, I remember reading a DNA survey from Palestinians and, you know, people who live in Israel, and I had to find a rabbi talking about it so no one could accuse me of anything. Even though, you know, I might have some Jewish blood in me myself from my grandfather, but he just didn't talk about that after World War II, because if it came again, everybody dies.
Right.
40% of the DNA they tested of Palestinians was from the family line Cohen.
Okay.
So 97% of the people in Israel were not of the biblical Jewish line, only 3%, according to a lot of scientists in New England that were testing DNA. So that's why I picked a rabbi to say that, so that, you know, nobody can accuse you of anything. But those were the facts, but we cannot follow facts. And if we even say them out loud, then the hidden hand comes from behind, slaps you in the head or something like that. But it's the truth. If the truth sets us free, we have to speak the truth, and that's why I admire you, because you made that decision.
That you certainly have as well, and
take obstacles. And for that, you know, that's where you are a very small minority. Most people would just go with the flow, and that's how genocide happens. because the government, the state, the media all say something and you all parrot it. You have to believe it and you have to stand up and just say, you know, that's okay with you, or you say nothing at all and they get away with it. And that's just absolutely terrible. And, you know, when we look at what's going on.
You know, the funny thing is that also, like, you and I are articulate in a way. I'm not that articulate, but I'm that's sort of what I do. But in very simple ways, again and again, you run into people making straightforward, obvious protests and refusals in their lives. You can see a woman hitting her child in the street, and a stranger will go up. So it says, you can't do that. People have a point where they don't allow, if they have any affect at all or any power at all, to people say no. We, all of us, assert the moments of not right and wrong, because that makes us sound like angels. And I'm certainly not an angel. I mean, I've done plenty of things that I'm not proud of. But still, people have this ability to say no, and we do it, continually assert it.
Indeed, my saying always was, not just no, but hell no.
Yeah, right.
We're not going down this road or that road, and it's just a shame from time to time that when there's a great decision to be made, that some people don't do that. Usually the consequences, especially in a police state, are, you know, they're going to kill you. So you don't have to worry about losing your job. You'll be losing your life, or you end up in a prison or something like that. So that's why they're more keen to go with the flow. But, you know, many, many people that we've had affiliated with the show have done hard time in federal prison for standing up for what they believe in. And
well, there are a lot of really admirable political prisoners and people doing that. They just given their lives just for not saying no. I mean, I'm not saying yes, or not saying what they're supposed to say. And whap, they're in for life. Get framed up and put away. I've done some study of that, especially from the, because I come out of the 60s, really, in the U.S. And as you mentioned earlier, like, I was a march marshal on the march from Selma to Montgomery with for King, which means we really stood between the marchers and the crowds of sometimes very hostile people who didn't want black people to vote. And
I'm younger than you, but I'm old enough that I heard Dr. King speak when he was alive. And
yeah,
as a child, you know, the words had great meaning to me, that and the effects that their souls will change. My father, on his honeymoon, was going to Florida. And he stopped in Georgia, you know, on the way down in some town somewhere. And there's fountains in the street. And, you know, one says, coloreds only. And another one, I guess, is for white people. And that was further down or something like that. So my dad gets out of the car and he drinks from the one that says coloreds only. And, you know, there's a good way to start a fight fast. So somebody called the local authorities. I don't know if that was a sheriff or a police officer. Comes in, hey, what, you know, hey, boy, you know, what you doing? You know, and it's like, can't you see that sign? That's for coloreds only. And my dad,
yeah,
a smart ass,
programming,
he goes,
you know, it goes, it's
you
so
see that
deep.
Pipe? What's the difference between the water that comes out over there and the one that comes out over here? It's the same pipe. You know, well, Dad, well, I wasn't around then, but, you know, he got to see the justice of the peace and pay his fine. But and then he just said, well, if that's America, I'm going home. And he turned around and went back. And but it takes that sometimes bit of a knot. Well, you know, many, many Americans, even back in those horrible days, you know, when you were partners in the military, you don't care what color anybody is when somebody's pulling you off the battlefield wounded. You don't care. That man is the most important person in your life, and it doesn't matter what he does or where he goes, because at the most crucial point in time, that person was there for you. And a world like that is a much better world to live in than one where we compartmentalize ourselves. And it's done on purpose to keep us enslaved, all of us, so that we're always divided and conquered, and we can never really have a free state that we seem to control and liberate
well,
ourselves.
Well, it's been it's been so strong. My family, my father's family was from the deep south for a long time family in the south. So I was kind of raised in my mother's family was from the north, and so I grew up like with both sides of that in my psychological tension in my own world. But the programming is so deep that that even with people that you care about, it is very hard to bring them around, to wake them up to the more practical logic, really, which King espoused, which was some kind of a loving between different groups of people. And what it's done to the South is it's allowed states like South Carolina and Georgia, it's allowed there by racial differences by the inability to get completely to get over the ways that peoples have been divided. It's allowed the state to become a nuclear waste dump in many ways, with a great amount of the nuclear weaponry produced at the Savannah River plant, and things that have turned the whole area into being of questionable ability to survive in the far future. With all the radiation in the area, so one thinks of that almost as a continuation, possibly as a continuation of the Civil War, of absolutely destroying areas for human habitation, and nobody would talk about it. A couple of the governors of South Carolina sort of lay down in the road to keep the trucks of nuclear waste from coming in, things like that. But so there are aware people, but the people as a group have not been able to unite to say, no, we have to save our environment. And part of that is the standard ways of racism that keep us apart. And that, in a sense, King's message of really a true Christianity, of loving thy neighbor, and was absolutely necessary for the survival of the people. He's a very practical person, and probably one of the reasons that led to his being assassinated.
Oh, indeed. The so-called true leaders of the world, they decide who's going to live, who's going to die, and they can't allow anyone to have the keys to the store that's a threat to their existence. Dr. King was one. Robert Kennedy was another. I've done many shows on the Kennedy brothers. John was another one that, you're rogue. You're not our lapdog, and you're standing up for yourself. You fired some of our, best people that we had to really run the covert operation, and you thought you could get away with it. Well, no way. We're going to hunt you down and shoot you in the street as an example, not just to the people, but to any leader who comes along, that you are not going to do these things against the real true powers of the world. And that, you can have a little bit of power, but ultimately you're our servant. And, maybe you can pull a little less on the leash for some of the people here and there, but overall you have to keep them snared to that leash.
Absolutely. Well, you'll notice that most of the, since the 60s or since the millennium, since the 2000, that most of the kinds of resistance that are occurring seem to be basically leaderless in a sense. Much less formatted in on a chain of command, which the old resistances of the last century were, partly because the leaders would get sort of bought off or would turn out to have been in the employ of one of the covert agencies and so forth. So the chain of command and within resistance is much less in evidence now and is much more group and consensus decision-making. And I think that's hopeful.
Oh, perhaps, but I liked your first couple of words that they're just in the shadows, and they're better at concealing a lot of the people who pull the strings. Usually where you find out about it
possibly.
Is where the money goes and who got paid. And you stand off stage, but you're still giving direction to the actors on the stage. And that's the big part of it. It's always been that way. It's in Shakespeare, the world's a stage, every actor plays his part. And that's just, you know, it's street theater has been the way, or a good part of the way, to dominate peoples. It's just one of the tactics they use. You know, the Beatles sang it in, you know, Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, nothing to get hung about. And we have to learn that we don't have this dynamic that we think exists. And, you know, most governments around the world are corporations. You know, there was a big thing here in Brampton where a reporter caught the mayor playing his hockey games without his mask and breaking all the COVID rules, and they threw him off the property. He was arrested for trespassing, ultimately. He said, well, you can't do this. It's a public place. And, you know, so I posted on their YouTube. No, it's not. If you look at the Brampton website, it's the corporation of the city of Brampton.
Well, that's true, George. And the governments are sort of corporate entities in a way. But on the other hand, there is a real difference between them. I was impressed the other day when Canada decided to join the Gambia and the Netherlands in standing up for the Rohingya people who are gradually being exterminated by the structure in Myanmar, or Burma, as the civilian word for it is. Both the Netherlands. Is that the fading out music now?
Yes, indeed. We blew our time. We'll definitely have to come back and do this again many more times, because there's so many chapters to your book and issues that have to be discussed. And it's very important.
Well, we also
getting
to know each other a little better. I wish, listening to you, I wish I were a whole lot more articulate.
Oh, you are, my friend. You are. And we thank you for coming out. We thank you for being a part of the show. And we encourage people to follow powerhour.com and read Sources of Contemporary Genocide, because it's great. Until the next time, I'm George Freund. This is Power Hour Nation. Thanks for coming out. Good day.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.